And welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio, both your prayerful and financial support that has kept us on the air for over 40 years now. And we are blessed today to be joined by Teresa Mull, and she's written a book for Sophia Institute. It's called Woke Proof Your Life, again, published by Sophia, or at least published publicized by Sophia Institute, published by Crisis Publications, available at Sophia's website and I'm sure other online retailers here in the Philadelphia market. I'd encourage you to reach out to the St. Jude shop and pick it up there. Give them your business. So Teresa, it is great to have you with us. Teresa, her writing has appeared in the New York Times, the Baltimore Sun, the Miami Herald, the New York Post, the American Conservative, and many other publications. She is currently an assistant editor of the Spectator World, a policy advisor for education at the Heartland Institute, and part-time editor of the Phillipsburg Journal, where her beloved terrier, Pitkin, has a weekly advice column. Her pastimes include country drives, trap shooting, outdoor exercise, and befriending offbeat characters. Teresa, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Very good. And it's quite a list of activities. I love the trap shooting. Done a little bit of that myself. So it sounds like you have plenty in your life to avoid these woke things that we're going to talk about today.
Yes, I think so. I think that's key to not having our spirits dampened so much by all of the bad news that seems to be everywhere we turn is a little bit of healthy distraction and enjoying nature and all the beauty that God gives us.
Amen. And again, the name of the book is Woke Proof Your Life. And when I saw the title, it picked my interest. And, you know, woke is probably a word that 5 years ago you had never heard. And now I don't think a day goes by where you don't hear it multiple times. And never in at least the circles I travel in, never in a positive way. I'm sure there's other circles where, you know, they think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But for a lot of us, it is. It's just the way things are in the world today and where we are that I think we chalk too much up to being woke. But in the book you set out right in the introduction, and if you don't mind, I'm just going to take a second to so folks know what we're talking about. The definitions that you laid out, and I thought they were great. That the definition of wokeness as a noun is a socio-political ideology characterized by the manipulation of noble goals such as equity, inclusion, social justice, and environmental stewardship by tyrannical left-wing zealots for the purpose of controlling and destroying American society. And then woke as an adjective, alert for ways in which noble goals can be manipulated for the tyrannical control and destruction of American society. And then there's a second, longer definition, but I think those two suffice to set the table for, you know, what you go on to talk about in the rest of the book. I'm just curious as to where the inspiration came from to put this book together.
There were a couple of things that inspired me. I got the sense in the past few years, especially since COVID, that the world we live in is a way less pleasant place, I would say, than it was certainly, you know, 2019 even, but definitely since I was a kid growing up, it just seemed as though we all had kind of mutual respect for one another. You know, we could disagree on things, but it was done civilly, and we still had this sense of wanting basically the same things in America. And I really felt like a shift happened recently, and as though wokeness just came out of almost. And I wanted to get back to what made our world nicer pre wokeness. And I happened to have moved home right around the same time that COVID happened and wokeness started to come on with such a strong assault. And what I found in my neck of the woods, I'm here in central Pennsylvania, it's very rural, I live in a small town. There's a lot of problems here, as there is everywhere, but I found that this slower-paced life, the smaller, more community-oriented existence that I return to is so much more pleasant and really Christian in its attitude. And I wanted to offer ways in which people who don't live where I live or have the same experience that I do can kind of adopt habits and attitudes so that they can have a less woke life, regardless of where they live. I joke that we're kind of stuck in the 1980s in a good way, a little bit behind the time, and there's not much wokeness here in my part of the world. So, but as I write in the book, you know, you can kind of do some things that can create this kind of life, regardless of if you live in a big city or the suburb or wherever you are.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of the issue, at least with me, is you can get inundated with this stuff, and sometimes you don't even set out to go there, right? So you're these dreaded things that we carry around in our pocket, these cell phones, and for whatever reason, you'll get notified on Twitter or Facebook or whatever other app you may have, you know, and somebody has made a comment, and next thing you know, you've gone down a rabbit hole for a couple hours, and you know, by the time you're done, you want to pull your hair out. And so, you know, these suggestions of ways to avoid or change or really change our habits so that we don't fall into those traps, because like you, I know many, many people who, you know, this kind of battle, whether it's going on between their own ears or with other people in their lives, is it's tiresome. It wears them out. And I even have the first chapter, I think it is, in the book is called Battle Fatigue, where, you know, we just get, they wear us down. And, you know, finally we throw our hands up, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's certainly intentional. You know, they just bombard us with all of this stuff. They're constantly agitating us, constantly wanting us to kind of be in fight mode. And, yeah, we get worn out by that. But I think a lot of that is manufactured. You know, I think that the woke people who identify as woke or are in favor of woke policies are really still the minority. And the problem is that they are powerful. You know, a lot of them are heads of these big tech companies. They're kind of controlling the narrative and the mainstream media and social media. They're also very well funded. So it can make us the sane non-woke people in the world, the traditional-minded citizens of America, feel overwhelmed and outnumbered. But I would urge people to reject that, to remember that if you believe in what's true and good and right and beautiful, that you are still the majority, and we see polling and statistics to support that. And even if you are the minority, if you're doing what Christ calls you to do, that you're always going to be winning, even if it feels as if the odds are against you. So I encourage people not to lose heart and to remember that.
Yeah, so as a father of four and a couple of them that are still in their 20s and recently out of college, you know, you can people talk about our kids getting brainwashed in college, and I think to some degree that's absolutely true. They're not the same kids that I sent off to college. And what I find is that there's just enough, it's just like the way that the devil operates, how Satan operates, is there's just enough truth in what they say and what they're being told that that they can latch onto it and, you know, say that, you know, part of it is true. And even in your definition where, you know, it plays on the virtues or social justice or these different things in life where in and of themselves, they're good. But when you use them to for nefarious purposes, if you will, to bring about change that, like you say, the majority doesn't want, then, you know, you feel manipulated. And I can see where they've been manipulated, that you know, you're pulling on somebody's heartstrings, especially when it comes to social justice issues. And, you know, it's real easy for people to be influenced and to buy into some of the wokeness.
Yeah, and that's something we have to be really careful of. I noticed in the book also is how the left, and I think it is because they are empowered, so to speak, by the devil, who is the master of lies, and he's very crafty. You know, these people, they know what they're doing whenever it comes to manipulation, to propaganda, to the sneaky ways that they peddle what they want us all to buy, and they have been very successful. And we have to be really careful in all things, but especially in these woke days, and especially in a world in which you can just straight up censor opposition, and you can just cancel people whose opinions you don't agree with, to really look beneath the surface and say, yes, of course, diversity, equity, and inclusion, those are all positive, really nice things, but how are they being brought about? Who is benefiting from these policies? And what is the actual fruit of this? You know, we talk about in scripture, it says, by their fruits you will know them, but about the false prophets. And all of the fruits of wokeness are bad. They're negative. We see skyrocketing depression, anxiety, you know, just everything that wokeness touches is bad and rotten and making our culture worse. So, you know, we are to be as wise as serpents and not to fall for this stuff. Just can't take it at face value. So.
And I don't know if this is in the book, but how much are the powers that be willing to lose in doing this? And I'm thinking about, you know, recent situations with Budweiser and some of the choices that they made, and then Target, the store and the choices they made, both of them around the transgender issue, and you know the new saying that we hear, you know, go woke and go broke, and you would think that other businesses might see the impact that decisions made by other companies has had on their bottom line, and yet they seem to continue to head down this path. Are they willing to risk everything in order to get us where wherever it is they're trying to get us to?
I really don't think so, because I don't think the vast majority of these people and these heads of companies actually do have principles. I think what happened with Bud Light and Target is that I think they thought the American people were more susceptible to what they were peddling than they were. And I think it was kind of a wake-up call, all the protests and boycotts that we've seen happen and come out of that. I think that they thought we were just going to swallow it all and go along with it and say, oh, yeah, this is great, and continue to support them. But that just shows how out of touch they are with the average consumer. And these people are the elites. They don't really mingle with the rest of us, you know, with average people. So I think that they were kind of taken aback by what happened. And I do think we saw whenever, right after the Dylan Mulvaney Bud Light boycott was really blowing up, right after it happened, Bud Light came out with some, like, really pro-America commercial that was, like, over the top. It was almost like an SNL skit if you were trying to be, like, absurdly patriotic. And that just shows you, you know, they didn't come out and promote Dylan Mulvaney again and double down. They didn't say, like, no, we love this person. You know, it's beautiful. Trans is this. They went silent for a long time, and then they were like, oh, man, like, we have to backtrack and undo what we just did. They didn't. So that just, I think that says it all right there. It's like, oh no, we're losing a ton of money. What do? We do the opposite of what we just did, because they don't care. They don't have principles. They just want to do whatever will get them the most earthly gain. So yeah, I'm optimistic that the more we push back and the more we boycott these companies, the more they're going to have to change their policies, and or else go out of business.
So in the second chapter of the book, you call it What's at Stake, with the subtitle Ignore It and It Won't Go Away. So I think that's exactly what we're talking about here, right? That if we just ignore it, if we continue to buy Bud Light or shop at Target or do whatever it is that, is being peddled, that it's not going to go away, with that we need to make conscious decisions, right?
Right. I think that's part of the reason that wokeness has been able to take such a firm hold as it has, is that we kind of have been a little bit asleep at the wheel. The people who are pushing wokeness are relentless. They are determined. They are power hungry. They are desperate for their earthly gain, because this is all they have. A lot of them are atheist or even anti-theist. They don't believe in God, or they hate him. So all they care about is the here and now. So they're desperate to get that reward. And I think a lot of people have been the ones, we are guilty of allowing wokeness to take as big a hold as it has, because we have been living our lives, working hard, supporting our families, just kind of being normal and not wanting to be bothered with wokeness as it's creeped in here and there. And then all of a sudden it's just assaulting us, it seems, every way we turn. So, we see what ignoring it has gotten us, and it's not good. So we need to really put an end to it now, before it gets even worse.
Very good. So, what should we? You have a chapter, What to Expect, and I'm going to be honest, I haven't gotten to that chapter. So, what are the expectations, you think, going forward? Are we going to continue down this path for a while, or are we already starting to turn it around somewhat?
I think we're starting to turn it around. I mean, I'm an optimist, so I think that actually part of the wokeness, the extreme level to which wokeness has gone, is kind of there's sort of a silver lining there, in that they do use these vague, feel good, sound good terms that kind of has lulled us into sleep and into accepting their agenda. But as we've seen drag queen story hours, we've seen actual performances at music awards and things like that, where people are basically doing devil worship and things. It's almost as if the mask has come off, the gloves have come off, and people are really seeing this whole movement for what it is. And I think that's going to be their own undoing. I think they kind of have gone too far, too fast, and the American people are like, whoa, 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 this is what you're about. This is what, the tolerance and the LGBT movement really is. It's this. You're going to, encourage our children to mutilate themselves, to take hormones, to do all these terrible things. So I think that people are waking up to it, and we have seen that in the various boycotts. I saw a poll recently put out by Gallup. I think it was like 52% of people last year said that they didn't think that corporations should be using their influence to push political agendas, and that was up to 60% this year, so that's positive. People are just getting, as we said, battle fatigue, just sick and tired of politics and controlling their lives and having to take a stand and promote some sort of cause every time they do the simplest thing, going to the grocery store, watching an NFL game. There's so many causes out there, and people are just exhausted. They're sick of it. They're fed up. They just want to live their lives, love their family, work their jobs, and enjoy life. So yes, I'm optimistic.
Very good. Again, our guest today is Teresa Mull, and the name of the book is Woke Proof Your Life, published by Crisis Publications and publicized by Sophia Institute. It was through Sophia that we were put in touch with Teresa. The book's available at Sophia's website. I'm sure it's available at Crisis' website as well, along with our online retailers. We got about 5 minutes before we go to the break, so maybe we can start talking a little bit about the things that we can do as individuals And looking at the book, there's some simple things, easy things I think we can do. And then you even get into some what looks like more drastic things that we do. And one of those chapters is called Move. And that's one of the things I've contemplated. We too are here in Pennsylvania. We're not in the center of the state. We're in the southeast corner here in Philadelphia. And a bit more woke than it is in central Pennsylvania, I am certain of that. And so you talk about actually moving. And is that physical move?
Yeah, I think for some people, certainly, we have seen, thousands of people move to places like Florida and Texas in recent years where it's more conservative. I just had this conversation with someone else who argued, isn't that kind of weak or cowardly? Shouldn't you stay and fight if you care about a place? And I would say certainly there is a virtue to be found in that, and that, in everything we do in life, we should pray about it first and ask the Holy Spirit for guidance. But there's also a certain level of bravery also that comes in knowing whenever you have to make a drastic change and to uproot your family and move somewhere. I encourage people to think about, what sort of environment you're putting, if you have a family or even just your own mental health. You know, if every day you go out and you have to contend with evilness, and if it's bringing you down, if you're alienated and lonely because you're living somewhere like San Francisco or Center City, Chicago or something, and it's having such an impact on you that you are unable to be the most productive, fulfilled version of yourself, then there's nothing wrong with leaving. And also consider where your tax dollars are going. You know, tax base is powerful, and if a lot of your paycheck or the money that you're spending locally is going to a bunch of really terrible woke causes, you know, that's no different from buying products from Target or Amazon. So to think about that also. There does come a point, you know, where you have to shake the dust from your feet and to surround yourself with people who are going to encourage you in a virtuous, holy, beautiful life. And that is not to say that we all have to give up and run away and become hermits or Amish or anything like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It is for everybody to discern. And I think that sometimes you do have to shake the dust from your feet and go somewhere that's going to support you on your journey to heaven, because that's what we're here for.
Yeah, and I've witnessed that myself. I live outside of Philadelphia, but I have we have a second place up near the in the Poconos, and the community up there. It's about 655 homes in the community, and we bought before COVID, and I think at the time there were about 85 houses for sale in that community, and today they sell just about as fast as they go up. So. A lot of folks from New York have moved down, and seeing quite a bit of this move thing going on. I know, in looking at statistics, sometimes we, especially New York in particular, I think, has had a mass exodus. I think they're backfilling with busloads of people coming across the border, but. So the move is definitely going on. We just hope that the same folks that are moving aren't the ones that brought about the issues and the problems that ravaged some of the communities and forced them to leave.
Yeah, that is a problem we see in actually places like Texas, and I lived in Idaho for a while, and they refer to it as the Californication, I guess, of these places where, they come because they're sick and tired of the homeless problems or the liberal policies ruining where they are living, and then they bring those terrible policies with them because they're just so used to voting Democrat or voting for these terrible, they don't learn their lesson, basically. So that is a problem. I guess my advice would be for people maybe to consider some places that might be less obvious, places like central Pennsylvania. It's pretty great here. I don't want to advertise it too much because I don't want it to be discovered, quote unquote. But, you know, there's plenty of places that you you might not consider as being obvious to relocate right off the bat. But, you know, there's quaint, sweet little towns in places like Oklahoma, Kansas, that tend to be really conservative, the Midwest. I don't know about Kentucky. I used to think that was a pretty great place, but they just voted for a Democratic governor, so I'm not sure about that. But, you know, use your imagination and, again, pray to the Holy Spirit and ask him for guidance. You know, there's a lot of surprises, and once you get to these places, if, you know, I advise people, and I talked to some in the book, interviewed them about when you're getting ready to relocate, or if you're considering it, if you can, especially in this world of remote work, to try a trial period, you know, maybe go rent somewhere for 3 months and see what it's like to actually live in the place before you make that big move. But, yeah, there might come a time where, you know, you have to implement your own sort of exodus. Think of the Jews in the Old Testament. I hope you don't wander around for a long time, but, you know, it's happened before.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. Well, we're almost at the bottom of the hour, Teresa. We're going to take a short break, and maybe when we come back, we can talk about some practical things that people can do that can't afford or for whatever reason can't just pick up and move their families across the country or even to the next state. For our listeners, again, our guest today is Teresa Mull. The name of the book is Woke Proof Your Life. And we're just going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
My name is Mario Diadamo, and I have been a faithful listener to Inner Sign Radio Ministry since 1990 and to Kathleen McCarthy as principal host since 2007. Hearing the witness of Kathleen and her guests has contributed greatly to my spiritual growth. They have educated me about the tenets of my Catholic faith by presenting lay and religious leaders discuss topics that help listeners create an informed Catholic conscience. I always encourage people who are in need of prayer and companionship to listen, call in, and become part of our radio listener family by joining thousands of other people praying for your intentions. I personally can attest to the power of the prayers from the ministry. Kathleen often reminds her listeners that you are never alone because the Lord is always with us. Through this Catholic radio and internet apostolate, the Lord is indeed with us in a very tangible way. Please share the good news as Kathleen takes a leap of faith and expanding to a two-hour program to reach many more people who need to experience the love of God. Thank you.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We are blessed to have had this Catholic radio apostolate for almost 40 years now. Thanks be to God for your partnership. Without you, this radio voice would be silenced. We have a monthly Mass offered for you, our loyal family of listeners. It's our way of saying thank you for underpinning our apostolate with your many prayers and financial support. This is your radio ministry, to be a voice for those who have no voice, to evangelize and to catechize for a time such as this. We know the Lord will bless you abundantly. He can never be outdone in generosity. If this ministry has touched your heart, help us to touch other hearts by supporting us with your prayers and financial support. Call us at 610-527-2906 or visit our website at inhissign.com.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. Your host, Ken Johnston. And again, I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio, especially in these days where the price of everything seems to be going up. Your financial support has continued to be there for us and allow us to continue to bring you great shows like those that I'm blessed to be able to take part of here on Wednesdays. We are here Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 and, you know, trying to, you know, be that light in what seems to be a dark world, and not just because it's going on 6 o'clock and it's already dark, but because of, you know, just what seems to be going on in the world. Today we're talking a little bit about, you know, wokeness and politics and, you know, things that are going on in the world. And, you know, just looking at the bigger picture, I was with some folks over the weekend and, you know, talking about just the different things that are going on all around the world, whether it's earthquakes in Nepal and Afghanistan and Morocco, it's floods in Libya, fires, you know, Hawaii and Canada, and now, you know, wars on two fronts in Russia and Ukraine, and Israel and the Gaza Strip. And so it's real easy to get depressed. We talked about people, you know, getting depressed just based on being affected by, you know, this wokeness or this seemingly turning of the world upside down, where things that used to be right are now wrong, and those that were wrong seem to be right. And it can be overwhelming. And before we went to the break, Teresa, we were talking about, you know, one of the options would be to move to a different community where maybe you're with more like-minded people than where you currently are. But a lot of folks, you know, just can't, you know, pack up their house and move across the country or even a couple states away. So maybe a couple of the practical solutions that you give to people if you have to, you know, stay where you are and continue to find a way to deal with the inundation, if you will, of these ideas that you never thought would be placed in front of you.
Yeah, I advise people, if they can't move physically, then to maybe find somewhere nearby within driving distance that you can go to relatively frequently to kind of find your peace again and to find normalcy. Maybe if you live in a big city, you can drive to a small town that's an hour away or something like that, or you can go visit your parents or grandparents who live somewhere that's a little bit more calmer and just kind of refresh your soul. I understand with the rising price of gas and everything else, that might not be the easiest thing to do either. But also, I advise people to make their homes kind of a sanctuary from wokeness, to make it a refuge, so that whenever you go into your home or apartment or wherever you're living, that you can kind of, again, be refreshed and revived by the space that you that you get to go to, and to make it a place likewise for your friends and family whenever they go there, that you're kind of sheltered from the woke madness. So this is a big thing I talk about in the book also, is about limiting our screen time. We know that we need to do that for our mental health, our physical health as well. But also I make the analogy that so much of what we consume through our screens, whether that be through the mainstream media, television, or social media, a lot of it is essentially junk food for our minds and our souls. You know, I write in the book that you wouldn't allow a complete stranger, you wouldn't open your mouth and allow a stranger to put whatever he wanted into your mouth and consume it. So why are we doing that with our hearts and our eyes and our minds? But that's exactly what we do whenever we open up so many of these apps and just kind of mindlessly scroll through them, you know, and they make a mark on our soul and in our brains. And again, that's on purpose. These apps and social media are designed by masterminds who know exactly what they're doing, and they're doing it on purpose. It's intentionally addictive. And again, they have these analytic tools that they use to make us outraged and to really get under our skin and to manipulate our moods and all these sorts of things. And it's very effective and very powerful. So to be very mindful of how we're using technology, make sure that it's a resource and not a recourse. You know, we're not just turning to our screen every time we have a few minutes of downtime that we used to use praying or absorbing beautiful literature or music or these sorts of things. So I advise people to make their homes a place that whenever they go to them, that they are, it encourages virtue in what we see and what we hear and what we put forth, and make it a place where we enjoy one another's community and each other's company, and just make each other better people whenever we go into these spaces. Make it a place that encourages holiness.
Very good. And once we do that, and once we find these other ways, I'm thinking about, even with our audience, it's getting more involved in that and in that community. And what are the things that you can do within our church communities, perhaps, or other organizations that are have a Christ-centered basis, so that, one of the things I've said to others and people have begun to say it as well, and is that we're not citizens, for those of us that are Christians, we're not citizens of this world. Our citizenship is in heaven, and for whatever reason, we need to bide our time here and until it's our time to go and meet our Creator. And for some people, that's helped quite a bit when you realize that, everything that's going on in this world is not, it's not what defines us, and it doesn't have to impact us. And just to having the knowledge of that and knowing that you have the freedom that you don't have to, keep going back to social media. You don't have to keep putting yourself in situations where you get bombarded with this stuff. I don't think it's possible to avoid it completely, but there are definitely a lot of measures we can take in order to avoid being bombarded. And I think a lot of that can be found in most of our churches. I think there may be some out there that have kind of bought into some of these, not all the woke scene, but certainly parts of it. And so, like I say, it's almost impossible to escape it unless you buy a private island or something. But we can make significant strides in trying to avoid allowing it to stress us out on a daily basis.
I agree. Yeah, I make the analogy in the book about unforced stress. We talk about, if you're a fan of the game of tennis, that there's a there's an expression called unforced errors. And I think so much of what we do in our lives, and I'm guilty of this too, is stress that we bring on ourselves and we bring into our lives. As you said, you can put down the phone. Yes, we do have a duty to be informed and to be prepared and to know what's going on in the world. But, that doesn't require being on your phone 10, 12 hours a day. It doesn't require you to watch or read every single news item that pops up into the world. Just do things in moderation and keep the peace of Christ with you always. The persecution that we're seeing now is nothing new. That's not to say we shouldn't fight it and that we can't struggle from time to time, but whenever you know that the Lord is your rock and your strength and that he's here to protect us and to help us through all of these battles, it really gives you a sense of peace and a sense of calm and takes away a lot of that anxiety and that fear that is such a powerful weapon of the woke. They rely on us to be agitated and afraid and upset and just anxious all the time. And that is the opposite of what Christ offers us. So keep that in mind whenever you start to get agitated, ask Christ and the Blessed Mother to help you, and it'll never fail you.
All right. I noted in the back of the book there's actually two appendixes, and it's interesting because appendix one is the list of companies that publicly oppose Georgia's election integrity law or Florida's Parental Rights in Education Act. And that that section is 2, 4, 6, 7 pages of companies that I think when you look at that, you're more or less saying that they're woke causes or woke companies. And then you get to Appendix 2, which is a list with more conservative values. And it's about a page front and back. So for those that are interested, and I know that there's sometimes there's pages on the internet you can go out and find and, you know, see who to try to give your business to and who not to give your business to. But it's just interesting that in your research, you know, we can come up with, you know, almost six times as much, as many companies that are on the woke camp versus the one page that's on the relatively conservative side. And I should say, too, that this it's not just a political debate here, right? I mean, there's certainly... You know, you may identify with political parties, but even within the political parties, we can't lump everybody together. I don't think, although sometimes they seem to vote that way, whether it's in Congress or our state legislatures or wherever it may be, that, you know, we can't say that, you know, every Republican's not woke and every Democrat is woke, but certainly the way they lean sometimes we kind of get that feeling. And so just to kind of take it out of the political realm that, you know, I think there's a lot of wolves in sheep's clothing out there that will try to identify as one or the other and or actually lean perhaps the other way, especially those on the claim to be conservative and yet support a lot of these causes that we might term woke.
Absolutely, yeah. I find that whenever people get to a certain level of power, you know, the old saying is absolutely true, power corrupts. So even people that you think that you can rely on who say the right talking points, who identify as conservative or Republican, you know, you get to a certain point where you have all this power, you don't want to give it up, and you have all these people offering you favors and money and all of these really attractive things, and it takes a really strong person to deny that and to stick to their guns and their principles. And yeah, certainly both sides of the aisle are guilty of that, and you can't just look at someone's the letter beside their name and assume that they're going to be anti-woke or traditional. But the same, you know, goes the other way. You know, we traditionally think of as Democrats as being more progressive, but there are certainly those out there who have seen the light, so to speak, of the woke movement, see how far they want to take our country in the wrong direction, and they're waking up to this and standing up to it as well and pushing back and being a little bit more freedom-minded, I would say, whenever it comes to things like education choice. So yeah, that again goes back to what we said earlier about not taking things at face value and really doing your research and being wise and informing yourself before you really just swallow whatever headlines you see. You know, our attention spans are so short these days and getting shorter every day with the advent of things like TikTok, and it really preys on a society with a mentality that's not really keen on reading a lot or doing the research or critical thinking. But we have to set ourselves apart and do all of those things.
Very good. I think I've covered most of what I wanted to get to. Is there anything, Teresa, that we haven't covered yet that you want to relay to our listeners before we let you go?
I would just encourage people to not get discouraged and to, whenever you do start on this woke-proof journey, to pray a lot, to always ask God to help you, because it can be a little bit challenging, but to know that there is certainly joy and so much reward to be found in this kind of lifestyle whenever you're following your conscience and you're doing good. And also to know that the more that you try, the more God will reward you. And certainly in writing this book, I've made so many connections. I started out small and, you know, one person led to another, led to five. They knew five people who knew five people, you know, and the community just really grew. So you are not alone. And the more you step out, the more you will come into like-minded, virtuous, beautiful, good people who want the same exact thing that you do. I encourage people to do that, and I will be praying for all of you.
Very good. Again, our guest today has been Teresa Mull. The name of the book is Woke Proof Your Life, published by Sophia Institute, available at Sophia's website, along with the other online retailers. But as always, I always mention here in the Philadelphia market, if you get in touch with the St. Jude shop, I'm sure that they can get a copy for you from Sophia and do it rather quickly. Teresa, can't thank you enough for your time today. Thanks so much for enlightening me and our audience as to, you know, what's really going on and some of the ways that we can keep our sanity in this woke world that we live in today. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Very good. Take care. God bless.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. So, like I said at the outset, you know, I don't even think woke was part of my vocabulary 5 years ago, maybe even 3 years ago. And it's something that gets thrown up all the time now. And, you know, it and sometimes I think we lump people together. And I think that, you know, you can't necessarily classify everybody based on a couple of things that they say. I only look at my own kids to in order to do that. I think at heart they've been, you know, raised you know, with a God and with a faith, and that they've in their roots are somewhat conservative in terms of you know, faith and country and those types of things. But there's enough going on in the world, and I think that that's the flip side of it, that we have to admit that there are some issues that need to be resolved, and it's not always the woke way to resolve them, that there are other resolutions. But when we create a vacuum and perhaps don't take care of things the way they should be, it allows other people to come in and do what they that they want to do. And whether or not all this has happened by plan and specific plans, I'm not sure. There's all kinds of conspiracies and conspiracy theories. Certainly the evil one is alive and well, and certainly part of all of this that is going on. I've looked a little bit more into the Freemasonry and some of the things that go on there. You know, and there's other people that just aren't hiding it anymore, and where they want to take not only our communities and our country, but where they want to take the world. And, you know, you don't have to look any further than the back of your $1 bills to see New World Order on there. And so at least some people for some time have been planning to get us where we are. But we know who's going to win in the end. You know, God is going to triumph. If I guess in the past where, you know, we would say flippantly perhaps that, you know, we read the book, meaning the Bible, you know, we read the book and we know who wins. But we don't know how many are going to be left when the victory actually comes. And so I think that's our job as Christians, as Catholics today, is to, you know, continue to bring people to meet Christ. We're talking a little bit about this morning, and somebody had breakfast last week that, you know, basically Christendom is dead. And I spent some time over the weekend thinking about it, and continue to think about it, that, you know, even though the United States and the world, you know, it wasn't necessarily a Christian country or a Christian world. Certainly a number of people that have not subscribed to, you know, the various Christian or Catholic churches. and even though they didn't, they still led lives of virtue. They still wanted to lead virtuous lives, that they wanted to, you know, find the truth and act well and do the right thing. And, you know, I think we're past that at this point, you know, and we need to admit it so that we can do something about it. It's just like addiction or anything else. If we keep ignoring the problem, we're not going to do anything about it. But when we admit that there's a problem, that things are pretty much going off the rails, that there is only, you know, one way, one truth, one life, and that is Jesus Christ. And short of Jesus, you know, paying us a personal visit, which he may do in the not too distant future, but I don't think it's going to happen today, that it's being left to us as believers to witness to one another that Christ is alive and well, that the church is alive and well, even though the numbers may not bear that out, that you know, Jesus Christ is waiting in every tabernacle and every church for visitors. And you know, when we make the effort to visit him, to spend time with him, whether it's in church in front of the tabernacle or in prayer wherever we happen to be, that he will reveal himself sooner or later to each and every one of us. And it's in that personal relationship that we can overcome, you know, some of these things that just drive us crazy these days. And you know, like as I mentioned to Teresa and others, and you know, something as simple as saying that our citizenship lies elsewhere, that it doesn't lie in this country, for some people it's just enough of a reminder that, you know, the crazy stuff can go on around us here, and we've witnessed an awful lot of it, and it's going to continue, and it may get a whole lot worse before it gets any better. But you know, we just need to remember where that way, truth, and life is, and it is in Jesus Christ. And if we hold tight to him, that he's going to give us the grace to bear whatever it is that's headed our way. He's done that for you know, a couple thousand years. We've watched it. We see it in the lives of the saints and some of the things that they underwent. And you know, always were they given the grace to bear whatever it was that they had to bear. And that grace came before the troubles. Happens every time. And as a Christian community or a Catholic community, you know, we need, I think, to reflect on our own lives and look back at the pressing times that we had, where we faced the most difficult obstacles in our life, and somehow or other we may have managed to get through. And if we look hard enough, I'll see that the grace that we needed to get through it came just in the nick of time. That, you know, God, while his permissible will allows these things to happen, he always gives us the grace to get through it. And I think that we need to, you know, look at that and take stock of it, because when we do, it allows us to trust him that when things come down in the future, and could be, you know, next week, next month, next year, or further down the road, that his grace is going to be there, and that the things that we do today help us to build up those stores of grace. You know, it says in the gospel, you know, store up your treasure in heaven. And I think that that's what we do when we pray, when we do good for others, that we store up that grace in heaven, and Jesus Christ does not forget it, so that when things come upon us later in life and down the road, that treasure that we've stored up, that grace that we've stored up, is unleashed, so that we can get through whatever it is that God's putting in front of us. I think about people like Frank in the 4 o'clock hour and the struggles that he's going through physically. Have an extended family member who basically was told this week that he has terminal cancer, and depending on the course of treatment, you know, anywhere from 6 months to a couple of years maybe. And so when you're faced with that, it brings in a whole new set of parameters, and you know, need to somehow or other to find God in that. And while it may not relieve the physical suffering and it may not allow us to live forever, I think it will allow us to bear whatever it is that we need to bear just for today. And when tomorrow comes, we wake up tomorrow, we'll worry about having the grace and the courage and the trust to get through whatever tomorrow brings. But we can't go there. We can't live there. We need to live in this moment. And I think when we do, as witnessed by so many people in recovery, so many people that have gone before us, that have fought the good fight and have served as witnesses for us, we know that that it'll work out. And no matter what God is going to throw our way, somehow or other, He'll bring about good, even if that good means having to meet Him face to face in our judgment and be ready to go to heaven or purgatory. Hopefully not that other place. We don't need to mention it, but especially in this month of All Souls. And just to end with this, today is November 8th, so we mentioned last week the first 8 days of November. You can get a plenary indulgence by the usual means and visiting a cemetery. So you have till midnight tonight to visit the cemetery. You don't have to necessarily pull in, maybe pull over on the side and say a couple of prayers either for loved ones or for those that are interred there, and get that plenary indulgence, and then continue to remember the souls in purgatory for the rest of November. So I want to thank you for whatever part of the 2 hours you were able to spend with us today. I certainly appreciate it, and we here at In His Sign appreciate it, and I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. Until then, I pray that God will hold you in the palm of His hand. Take care, and God bless.